Murray Bauer, the chair for Southeast Asian Studies at CSIS. I have a good friend here from Manila, Maria Ressa, who is the founder and lead innovator at a media company called Rappler. And Maria, I think Rappler is now operational in both the Philippines and Indonesia. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Welcome to Washington.
Thanks.
We really want to take advantage of you being here. To talk a little bit about some of the politics in the Philippines and the U.S.-Philippine relationship. The alliance is under some pressure. I think Filipinos, we've seen the Filipinos ask for greater reassurances from the Americans now that the Chinese are pressing in the South China Sea. How do Filipinos think about this relationship now?
You know, in terms of the South China Sea or the West Philippine Sea, as the Filipinos call it, Americans are its security blanket. We know that we have one of the poorest naval forces, and that there has been greater pressure from China. And for the last 2 or 3 years, I think our Secretary of Foreign Affairs has been very straightforward, asking for U.S. help there. And that's something that plays also both positively and negatively in the politics of the Philippines leading up to the presidential elections in 2016.
So President Aquino and President Obama last year signed the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. Since then, it's been sort of mired and stuck in your Supreme Court. The White House is thinking of a trip. The President Obama will be back in the Philippines. If EDCA was signed, that trip is going to look very robust in terms of announcements pertaining to strengthening the alliance, Americans investing in modernizing Philippine defense capabilities all around the country. If it's not signed, boy, that might send a whole different message. Where does EDCA stand, and are Filipinos aware that this could be a massive deterrent to the Chinese?
Yes and no. I mean, there should be greater clarity on this, and it's a no-brainer that it would be signed, right? Except that, again, you look at the myopia that's created by the 2016 presidential elections. You have to look at the administration now as extremely weakened because the person they wanted to name as the presidential candidate is rating so poorly in polls.
And that's Mar Rojas.
And President Aquino is under siege. I mean, from the beginning of the year until now, he's been pressed to name the presidential candidate for the Liberal Party. They haven't done that, and it is a free-for-all, and it blankets everything in the Philippines right now, I think,
But to an outside observer, wouldn't the fact that you're term limited, and if you actually look at Philippine politics, parties aren't ideological, it's about personalities. So I don't know if a Philippine president has been able to sort of name his or her successor.
President Aquino is one of the most popular presidents at approval ratings before this year,
right,
in unsurpassed, you know, by any president, I think, since Marcos. The fact that now he's struggling for it. So look at it this way. Our institutions are so weak. This administration wants to make sure that that its policies continue. And the only way it can do that is by naming somebody who would continue these policies. Now, when I say naming, part of it, the reason it needs to do that, or the Liberal Party feels it needs to do that, is precisely because there are no institutions. And this president himself, like former President Arroyo, can also be sued for plunder. It's not a situation where I suppose there's both self-interest and the interest for a longer-term history,
yeah,
legacy.
The story of President Aquino is that bounding popularity. I mean, and it was actually sustained for several
for a long
his first
period
several
of time,
years,
right.
But it has plummeted in response to the actions of the Mama Sapa.
Yeah, the police special forces operatives,
right,
who were killed January this year, 44 of them, and largely again seen as a response to the United States call to kill a high value target, the Malaysian terrorist who had lived in the Philippines for years.
So what's your outlook for the Bangsamoro peace agreement?
You know, I'm watching it very closely because the Bangsamoro law, so essentially the Moro Islamic Liberation Front has stood up to its end of the deal. It threw out the terrorists beginning in 2005 and has come through every time. The Philippine government now needs to stand up and do what it promised to do, and it doesn't look like it can. A lot of that is, again, because of the political rhetoric that it's going on. If the Bangsamoro law doesn't pass Congress, I think I actually see dire circumstances, because the moderates who have been negotiating this, and keep in mind the negotiations have been going on for more than 17 years,
right.
The moderates who are at the center will lose credibility for their community. And the Southern Philippines, you're talking about rule of law there. The rule of law has been the MILF in these areas. In many instances, the local government is so corrupt and has no credibility. It's been the MILF running these areas. What happens when those moderates lose control, lose credibility? You're going to see more extremist hardliners coming in, and they push a whole different agenda.
The stakes are very high.
Extremely high, particularly since it connects to a global security environment where you have Indonesians, Australians going, and this is where it can connect with what is going on with ISIS. At its height, ISIS was pushing out about 200,000 pieces of social media content daily. Right now, that's gone back slightly, but the Philippines is starting in 2010 was named the social media capital of the world.
Right.
So again, if it crumbles, if peace doesn't bring prosperity to the Southern Philippines, you could see it go right back to what happened in the late 90s, which is a safe haven for terrorists and the Filipino youth who are enticed through social media to not just become more extremist in perspective, but to actually take the ideology, this Al-Qaeda 3.0 ideology, and bring it home.
A lot of Americans look at security now, security in Asia. I should say not a lot of Americans. I would say elite American policymakers. And I think it's starting to dawn on them that economics is the foundation for a sustained security in Asia. But let's talk about the Philippines on that front. On the one hand, the Philippines wants the Americans to strengthen their commitment under the alliance, but on the other hand, they haven't passed EDCA. And, but we do see the Philippines thinking about changing the economic laws in your constitution, which would allow the Philippines, if they wanted to join TPP and become part of the economic integration story that the Americans are trying to create in Asia. What's the outlook for the economic charter change and the Philippines joining TPP?
So in general, still as a backlash from the Marcos years, charter change brings with it a lot of baggage. And that's really stood in the way of this. I think, again, I say it's a no-brainer that the EDCA, that the alliance with the United States, both in security and in economics, move forward. We've heard this, and if it was not an election year, you would see forward momentum on this, both in TPP and in EDCA. But given the timing in the Philippines and the president and an administration, in many ways under siege to come up with a candidate, and the election fever that is there, the lack of institutions that will actually continue policies that are in place, you're seeing not just a slowdown, it's moving at glacial speed, and it's being obscured by domestic politics. How fast it will go will now depend on the president. Again, President Aquino needs to show clear leadership on both of these points. If he does, he can push it. But the question is, will he expend his political capital for foreign policy, which are essential to the Philippines, or will he do it to make sure that his administration can stay in power?
Maria Ressa, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciated those insights.